Hello and welcome to the Footvey English podcast in collaboration with World Football Index, a unique mix of fandom and journalism. Footvey English is your one-stop shop for all things Venezuelan football in the English language, from the men's to the women's and the domestic leagues to the national teams. Today we are joined by Juan Manuel Paez, part of the illustrious Paez family in Venezuelan football. A former professional player himself, Juan is now a coach at Academia Emeritense in Mérida. And to be honest, this is an episode I'm very excited for. Not just because Juan Manuel is a rarity in the sense that he's a football coach within Venezuela who speaks perfect English, but also because it's Paez who is going to be able to communicate the family's philosophy, the importance of their ideas and their role in Venezuelan football in English for us. So, Juan, honestly, it's a pleasure to have you today. How are you?
Jordan, how are you? I'm fine. With all the difficulties that we have, but now I'm here with you.
Yeah, and for our listeners, it's interesting as an opener to say, during the day, Juan and I were talking about today's podcast and what time we were going to do it. And Juan, you were telling me if the electricity was back on, we would be able to record it. And if not, you'd have to make alternative arrangements. So obviously for people in Venezuela, they're familiar with these kind of problems. But for people that listen to this podcast from outside of Venezuela, can you just explain currently what the situation is in Mérida?
For us, it's a day-to-day thing. That we are not 100% sure that we are going to have electricity all day. And we need to juggle with that and to look for solutions. That's one of the things we always do in our family. We try to not look for the problems, but instead look for solutions. So this is something we suffer every day, and we need to pass that, I guess.
And how long has the situation been like that in Mérida?
At least 10 years. We are on the verge of a big blackout in all Venezuela, like we had 6 years ago. But for now, it's just something that is 2 or 3 times a day for 3 hours each time.
And I remember when I came to Mérida for the first time in 2019, I was with Gerard, I was with Ayrton. And one memory I remember is halfway through the afternoon, halfway through Academia Emeritense's afternoon training sessions, Pochi sent Ayrton off to go and find gasoline to fill up the lawnmower. And he then had Ayrton filling up the lawnmower with gasoline and getting started. And I remember thinking, hey, this is crazy. This is a professional football player who's been training in the morning. You know, his football development was in La Liga with Mallorca in the academy. And here he is at an academy in Mérida being sent off to get gasoline and fill up the lawnmower. But like you say, that's how things are, and you find ways to cope. And I just find it incredibly insightful that how we can learn about these problems through football. So what I'm interested to know is, you said this has been going on for 10 years now. How does things such as electricity shortages affect football in Mérida? And obviously, as I'll explain as we get into the podcast, Academia Emeritense itself.
Well, the first thing is that it makes more complicated to put the teams on the systems in the association here or in the Venezuelan organized football, because we don't have the internet all the time, so we need to be prepared if the electricity comes off. And we need to do the things quickly, and we need to use our time as fast as we can, because we don't know if the electricity will go out. So we need to have everything charged. We need to prepare for everything that has. For example, I had told my parents to go there I had called a friend to go there if the light or the internet wasn't on. So we look for solutions in a few words.
Yeah, and I remember in 2019, but also in 2022, when I came back in September last year, I remember thinking like, okay, Merida is not just a place that suffers with electrical outages often, but also like there can be water shortages, like running water shortages, like throughout the country. And one of the things I found, you know, logistically really interesting is Academia Emeritense, for those who don't know, is a private academy in Merida that also has a first team playing in the regional semi-professional leagues. They have around 300 to 400 kids in. And what I noticed, and like I said, logistically interesting, is you always had plenty of water on hand, you know, for all of the kids, all of the players. And I think that's something that's, you know, obviously taken for granted in many places of the world. But here in Venezuela, and particularly outside the capital, that's something that, you know, is something extra for a football organization, a football coach to think about, no?
Yeah, we need to be ready. We need to say to the players, bring your own water in case there's no water running out. So the kids are getting used to putting in their bags, like their shoes, their shin pads, their water, and their clothes, because the weather here, it changed very fast. You have seen it. You saw that in a moment it's raining, then the sun is super, super bright. So we need to be ready for all the things that presents in the moment.
So for listeners of the For the English podcast, it may be already familiar to them, or maybe this is news to them, but Merida is one of few genuine football hotbeds in the country. You've grown up in Merida yourself. A lot of your family are from Merida, Meridenos. Can you explain to us a little bit about the football culture in Merida and what makes it, you know, a genuine football hotbed in a baseball country?
The first thing to say is it's not only in Merida. In the Los Andes region, it's the principal sport to play, because all the people from Los Andes are people who think a lot because of the cold, or I don't know. And we like the football to be intelligent. So the intelligent football is to pass the ball, not to carry a lot, not to go a physical mold, because we are tiny, we are not tall. And I think that's one of the things, the football here in Los Andes is like that. Here in Merida, we have a tradition to have players who are very skillful, that always associating with others, that plays always to look a beautiful game of passing. And that's something that has been like this since I have memory, because 30 years ago, my uncle created Academia Meritense to look away to potentiate the young kids in Merida, because they saw they have the potential, but they don't have the education to play it. They looked to make better the football in Merida. As a result, the first season, they got beaten by every single one of the teams for 3 or 4 goals. But the second year, they win from 10 categories, I believe they win 7. And the next year, we win every single one of the categories. And that happened 2 or 3 years in a row. Then the academy is starting to change their way to train, and that made the football more competitive, harder. And right now we are having a lot of competition from a lot of academies, but still not a single club in Merida have like signature like we have of playing football. All the academies one team in a category to the next one doesn't look like the same. They play like two teams different. Not like the same club. And I think that's one of the things we have, like a signature, as I said, and that makes us more thin for you guys that look for something more European that looks to have the same structure from the young ones to the first teams.
And what do you think as a city, as a state, what do you think makes Merida possess such a strong football culture? Like I said, it is a genuine hotbed for not just football talent, but also football culture, football fans. You know, genuinely a large proportion of the city care for the main football club, Estudiantes de Merida, but obviously there's other football clubs in the area like Ula. Why do you think the football culture is so strong in Merida in comparison to other cities in Venezuela where there really isn't as much or any football culture at all?
Well, first, because in Merida, we don't have a lot of baseball fields to start with something. They have the basketball fields, but they are not as many as football fields. I was reading the other day, like 4 or 5 months ago, someone who was enumerating the fields here in Merida and were more than 30. That's a great number for a tiny city like ours. So that makes the kids to go and look football and start shooting the ball, start passing the ball with each other, and that creates a culture, creates like a way of living in the young kids, because that's the first sport that they play. I have friends that played basketball in the professional league, and I remember them playing with me in Academia Meritense. So it's something that happens here, and then they jump to their other sport. They don't feel a lot comfortable with football, and they jump to other sport. But they start always in football here in Merida.
And in Merida and in Meridano football, the Paez family have played a vital role. And it's fair to say that is also the case across Venezuelan football, across the country, at least from, you know, the 70s and 80s onwards, when there were multiple Paezes, your uncles, playing. And then from the 90s with Academia Meritense, and then from the early 2000s when Richard, your uncle, was the national team head coach with a number of his brothers involved in the coaching setup. The Paez family are famous in Venezuelan football, and they're also characterized in Venezuelan football. People have an opinion about the Paez family. You can pretty much ask anyone in Venezuelan football about the Paez family, and somebody will have something to say. It's nobody's ever going to say, I don't know. They're going to say something. What does being a Paez mean to you?
To me, it's very funny. I love it because normally the people that will have a bad opinion about our family, normally they don't know us. They talk because we are a strong bonded family. We always support each other. We have like the philosophy of we are so much, we need to be much. So the people see us like we are, I don't know, egoistic or bad attitude. And we are the opposite. You that know us from the inside, you saw we are a very fun family, a very united family. We always look for each other. We suffer the loss from our family. We are happy when the our family is going well. So in football, it's the same. We always have an opinion because people want it or not, Richard started a path that has reached to the point where the people are right now demanding a World Cup for Venezuela, like we have always been the strong ones in the continent. So that's something that in the 80s didn't happen. In the 80s, the people forget that 40 years ago, we were a team that was beating for everyone Bolivia did us 6 goals always. Brazil did us 7. Argentina did us 7. So people forget that. People forget that in the past decade, in the past 2 decades, we have a growth exponentially high that made Venezuela visible for the world because the people didn't know Venezuela in football. And right now we put Venezuela in the world for people to talk about it. Right now, Richard, Pochi, Chichi, Richard, Andrew, and Raymond have always an opinion in Twitter, and people respond to their opinion because they say like you were to a World Cup. Yeah, but remember where we were before Richard, because people talk about Pastoriza, people talk about Cesar Farias, people talk about Dudamel. Who started everything? Richard create a bond between the people in the national team that make people wanted to be a Vinotinto player, wanted to see the games from Venezuela. I remember the first game from Venezuela. The stadium was nearly at half crowded. Right now, it's sold out everywhere in Venezuela. So that change, we need to take a look at that. We can't escape or trying to hide that fact. So people, tell me.
No, I was going to say, do you feel like the successes and the progress that the national team made under Richard Páez is overlooked or underappreciated?
I believe it's underappreciated, and it's because, like I said, people didn't know us. People who know us appreciate a lot the work from Richard. To make a point, Cesar Farias was one of the biggest rivals in football, of course, from Richard. And it's the first people who defend the process of Richard Páez in the national team. That says a lot. That says that the guy who were always one to each other, attacking and saying that this and that, and they respect each other. That shows you how it's appreciated by people from football. But the thing is, in Twitter, everyone has an opinion. Everyone says whatever they want to say. And if it has 3 or 4 retweets, it happens to be a lot of people. But the people who know football know that Richard Páez was the one who started this. And it's something, it can be hyped.
And you mentioned about a rivalry between Cesar Farias and the Páezes. That's something that I wasn't aware of. Could you tell me a little bit about the rivalry? Like, what was the rivalry? What caused the rivalry?
The styles, the differences of style, because Cesar has always played direct football, a physical football, a football that has always been straightforward, and Richard was more elaborate. I don't say Cesar Farias played a bad football or played an ugly football. I don't like the football of Cesar Farias, but it was something that was functioning because he did a lot of points, a lot of wins, and changed the mentality of the Venezuelans. But Richard, I love that play. I have lost count of how many times I saw the Uruguay 0, Venezuela 3 in Uruguay, because I love that game, because that shows how Venezuela played and how Venezuela could play against the big rivals. That's why I don't feel, I don't see myself in the football that Venezuela has been playing for a long time, because I know Venezuela can play as beautiful as they play back then.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so it was a good time to address my next point in you bringing up Farias and Páez football and the differences between the two. What is the football identity of the Páez family? Because I think it's fair to say, although as I witnessed myself last year, you're a family that discuss ideas and you're very happy to have, you know, big disagreements in a very passionate way. And 5 minutes later, you're back to being, you know, best friends. You appreciate the process of debate. I saw it between you and Raymond. What is the football identity of the Paez family?
First, it's fair to say that we share the same idea. We want an attacking, spectacular, and elaborate football. Then we have the differences. But the premise is the same. Attacking, spectacular, and elaborate football. We have certain things that we like and we don't. For example, I like to attack, leaving only the two central defenders back. I prefer to win 11-10 than 1-0. So that things are what makes our family like that. All of us have an opinion. All of us have differences. But in the other point, we play similar football one to another.
And I remember earlier in the year, I had a meeting with Caracas, with Miguel Mia Vitali, a player that, you know, played plenty of football under your uncle for the national team with Richard Páez. We were speaking about Isaac Davila, who's a product of Academia Emeritense and is now playing for the Caracas youth team. He even captained the team a couple of weeks ago. He's having a great first season with Caracas. And Mickey, Señor Mia Vitali, he said, you know, this kid, he's classic Maradeño. He's classic Maradeño footballer. And the conversation, unfortunately for me, ended there because the other person in the room, Mauricio, knew exactly what Mia Vitali meant. I obviously am always learning and always forming a better image. But when somebody says a player is a classic Maradeño player, what do you think they mean by that?
It's a player that is not physically gifted, not tall, not very bold.
But he said this with a lot of praise. It was a compliment.
I'm trying to explain because they look for us and they know we are from Mérida because they see us tiny and skinny, and then they give us the ball and they see, oh, this is a gifted player, have a very great skill. He likes to play a passing football. They are always moving. They are always doing the things that the game requires. That's what the Merideño football is. We don't like a physical challenge. We don't like to put the ball long and run. We prefer to elaborate the play, to pass to each other, to do 100 passes before we do one goal. Something like that.
Mm-hmm.
And when you listen to this, tell me if you're not picturing yourself in Isaac.
Me personally.
Yeah.
No, well, I'm a winger that in possession of the ball I play as direct as possible. I've said to Pochi, I would love to one time when I come to Mérida play a game, even if it's just the training game, with Academia Emeritense, you know, maybe not the first team, but because I love watching it. But I'm like, well, I think I could play well in this team because they give me the ball in smart positions. I'm a left-footed winger that's always relied on my pace.
Bring
a
your
good
shoes,
long pass and
bring
a powerful
your shoes
shot.
Next time, because I have the under 23 right now. You can play in that team. You will enjoy. But as a winger, I don't think so. I see you more as a left back if you are going to play directly, because I love to put my left and right back to put play as high as they can, so yeah, they will receive the ball in where you like to receive it.
I started my 11-a-side football as a left back when I was 11 or 12. I played left back until I was, I think, 13, 14. So I think two seasons. And then I had a season at left wing where how many games was it? I think it was in around a 25 to 30 game season. I scored 20 and assisted 40. And all 40 of my assists were for the same player, the striker, who scored 60 goals that season. But no, I was a left-footed left winger. I think the trend to play left-footed players on the right and right-footed players on the left hadn't like fully developed in England, or at least at the age groups that I was playing at. But one thing I'm interested about Academia Emeritense and the fact that it's such a definitive, easy to identify style, and from my understanding has had that style, you know, practically since the beginning. Is there a risk that Academia Emeritense ends up just producing one style of player and only one or two positions? For example, we get a lot of 10s and a lot of good 8s, but Academia Emeritense equally capable of producing a quality centre back or a quality 6?
Well, I believe we have very good players that plays our style, but can adapt, because I have some very large number of players that have go to other teams and had a great develop. The thing is, we play our style and we don't look to play other things, but we adapt the players that play other styles to our style of play. So when they got out, they have more tools to play in other teams, and I believe that can help them, because it's a complex way of playing the one we play, because it's hard to pass the ball as many times as you can. It's hard to wait for the right time and the right movement, and that the other team have a bad position. So to have that type of patience, I think the players can go outside and play. Like now we have two or three central backs that, in my opinion, could be playing a second division or first tier. But sometimes people don't see it, because we are not playing Liga Futebol Junior, or we're not playing in a second division. I believe if we could be in a second division, we will sell a lot of players, and not only the skillful ones, but the work ones, the ones that did the dirty job.
So one reason I was really excited to speak to you, in addition to the reasons I said at the start of the podcast, is in the few days that I was in Merida last year, you not just watching the training sessions, but also in the evening, when, you know, as a family and me and Mauricio's guests were having, you know, long and in-depth and really interesting conversations, you strike me as somebody that has a future in Venezuelan football, not just at Academia Emeritense, but above. You know, you're young, you're clearly intelligent, you have multiple languages, you have football in your veins. One thing is having a playing style to stick to, but a different thing is having a coaching philosophy and how you install that in your players. What would you say is your individual coaching philosophy?
Well, I like to play the Academia way, but I have always say that the day I see the players are not in the right style. If I arrive to a team that I see it's a very vertical team, I need to adapt the way of playing. Maybe we are not going to elaborate a lot, but we are going to do a lot of movement to contribute to the player's strength. Because if I see a team that is not very technical gifted, it would be bad for me as a coach to obligate them to play my way. I will be putting myself a hanging rope on my neck. But if I can play my way, I will definitely do it.
And how as a coach do you get your message across to your players? What's your, you know, to use the same phrase again, sort of what's your methodology? How do you, like, you know, for example, some coaches are very instructive. They just, you know, they literally just give instructions. Other coaches are very demonstrative. They will demonstrate. other coaches will encourage players to be sort of self-taught and develop a mindset of teaching themselves and improving themselves and finding solutions to their own problems. So on the pitch, the player doesn't think, okay, the coach said in this moment, I have to do this. Some coaches will coach like that. Other coaches will give the player the freedom. Okay, this is a problem and I've been coached to be a problem solver. I'm going to deal with it how I think best. How do you as a coach, you know, form your players, coach your players?
Well, I look for demonstrate how I want to play. I always show the guys the drill we are going to do because I have the facility to do it right now, so I will do it. And I believe I gave the players always a lot of tools in the field, and then they need to pick one and stick with that. I say if the left back cuts in and he see the right back passing from behind, he needs to do a long ball. But then I do another drill where he needs to pass from the in the pitch, not on the air, to number 9. Then I do another one who he cuts back again and pass on the left midfielder that it's open. And they then in the game, they decide. I can do nothing when the players are in. I just can like mark them the spaces or look at that player or see this, but they decide. When they get in, they need to have the intellectual choice of saying, if I do this, this will happen. If I do that, that will happen. But I always gave them the choice of for them. I gave them the tools and then they see. They are the ones that are playing. I'm the one that is outside. I need to work a lot on the week for them to watch on the weekend the product. And the product will be the players. I don't do the goals. I don't block a shot. I don't pass the ball. I don't do a tackle. So they need to pick how they are going to play. And if I like it, I continue with those players. If I don't, I do substitutions. But it's something that I always say. They will decide. They will do what they have trained. They will do what his skill, their skillful, the skill will tell them.
No, excellent. It's really, really insightful to hear that. And it will give the listeners, I think, you know, food for thought. Particularly a lot of coaches do follow Fervet English, and a lot of coaches that are sort of at the beginning of their career in Europe and are looking to coach in different countries and widen their football education. So I think it's a really insightful answer that will give people things to think about. To move away from Academia Emeritense and Mérida a little bit, and perhaps even away from the Paez family a little bit. In terms of Liga Footvay, are you watching much Liga Footvay at the moment yourself, the top tier?
I have always saw Liga Footvay when it's televised because I go to the pitch when it's when someone of my family is playing. I'm not gonna lie, I'm not a Estudiantes de Mérida fan, but I watch a lot of football, at least 2 or 3 times a week. And I'm trying to always be watching the games from Academia or right now I'm looking for time to go tomorrow for the game against Mérida against Táchira at 9 a.m. in Sotorrosa Stadium. So I enjoy watching football. My wife, it's a bit mad with me because I watch a lot of football. We got married and the next day I was training. The weekend of that wedding, I was watching Premier League, I was watching La Liga, I was watching Bundesliga. So sometimes it's a bit much football. And yeah.
And as a Football English podcast, an account dedicated to Venezuelan football, it'd be great to know, like, what are your thoughts on the standard of the domestic game in Venezuela at the moment? Not the national team, we're getting to that, but Liga Football. In terms of how do you think the level's doing? Do you think Venezuelan football at the moment is improving? It's on an up, or is stagnating, or even declining? What are your overall thoughts?
I believe that in Venezuela, the football is not getting the improvements that should have, because players are getting better every generation. You see players that could be playing in a top five league in the world, but the teams don't help, the stadiums don't help. Sometimes the same league, the league doesn't help them, because they put in a schedule that has a lot of heat, put them in a field that is not appropriate to play a good football, and that type of thing. The big problem that we have in Venezuela is that the coaches don't do the job. The coaches train always double sessions, trains to extenuate the players, and the players are always tired and are not prepared to be in a high quality competition. And you can see that when they go outside in Libertadores or in Sudamericana. And that's why we are not doing the things okay in the international football.
And away from the domestic game, obviously Venezuela have just started their World Cup qualification campaign with an away loss to Colombia 1-0 and a home win to Paraguay by the same scoreline. Jose Salomon Rondon scoring a last-minute winner from the penalty spot to secure 3 points in the first home game of the qualification campaign. How did you see the first two games for Venezuela, Juan?
The first thing that I want to say is, right now we are facing the easiest World Cup qualifier that we have never had. Because 7 spots in the World Cup, I'm counting the playoff thing, but 7 spots to get into the World Cup tells you that you don't have to win a lot of games, but only the ones in home. So you need to think, how can I do the math? We started with Colombia. I didn't like the game in both sides. Colombia played with a lot of fear. They knew Venezuela could do a lot of harm to them. But Venezuela played with more fear than Colombia. They were trying to not get a goal conceded. And when you play with fear, when you play to not lose, you end up losing almost every time. I believe if Venezuela played as they played against Paraguay, we possibly could have won one or two goals against Colombia. Colombia looked to me as a very plain team. I didn't saw the Luis. I forgot the last name. The Liverpool player.
Luis Diaz.
Yes, I didn't see the Luis Diaz that plays in Premier League. I see a Luis Diaz that was overshadowed by Alexander Gonzalez. I didn't see a midfield in Colombia that was carry. Only when James got in and we were losing already, Colombia saw a lot more like a threat, because they had a player that could get balls between our players. Venezuela never tried to attack. They were only trying to be careful, trying to not have mistakes. And I believe that that way of playing will not give us a lot of points out of Venezuela. And against Paraguay, we changed the mindset. We look to play a more forward football, more looking for taking risks. Our right back was passing. Miguel Navarro has an outstanding play. I didn't like much the Brujo Martinez and he played with.
With Yangel.
I didn't like that tandem. I believe we need to have one more player. I believe if Soteldo plays with those two, they can have someone who have the creativity to put one or two passes to the strikers. I like Joseph and Salomon tandem. I think if Venezuela play with two real forwards, we will have a lot of chances. But as I say, Paraguay was poorly too. I believe they are lost in their way of playing, and we take advantage of that. Sure, the penalty is something we can skip. There were two hands, one from the Paraguayan player, one from the Venezuelan player. Those two, how can I say, anular? Like,
yeah. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, disallowed.
Yeah, so the goal should have counted. So I believe Venezuela could have done two or three goals more than the one that we did. But luckily, Salomón showed his veteranía, his
years. His mentality.
Yes, and he showed the way to the young players and take a hard moment in the game and did the goal that we needed.
Yeah, to score a penalty 0-0 in the 93rd minute in the, you know, the first home game of a World Cup qualifying campaign in, you know, in a year where he's taken a lot of criticism, you know, both that club and national team level.
In a criticism that is, that it's not, doesn't
deserved.
Have the, yes, because I believe Salomón is doing a great job in River. He's doing all the dirty work for the players to liberate the other players. Yeah. Salomón have never been a great striker of great numbers. I have always saw him as someone that will free his teammates, will make them more free, and he is an animal inside the area. If he has one, he will score it. But 4, 5, 6, I have never seen him score a hat trick that I remember. Maybe somebody listened to this and put the video of the 3 goals of Salomón. Huh?
But he got a hat trick of headers in the Premier League for Newcastle, I think, or West Brom, but a hat trick of headers.
Yeah. So, but I don't recall it right now. Maybe he did more than one hat trick. That's what I'm saying. But
yeah,
you don't have Salomón as a goal scorer, as a goal machine. You have a Salomón as a hardworking player. As mm-hmm. a great teammate, as a guy who will spend the 90 minutes having battles with the central backs and all the defensive zona.
Yeah, and it showed in that data I shared with you earlier in the day that in the first two World Cup games of qualifiers, I'm just going to bring it up to quote it exactly, because I'm not too sure if the data was per game, per 90 or overall, but for fouls, not fouls suffered, but actually fouls committed, Rondon was right up there at the top. I'm just bringing it up so we can quote it. Where have we gone? Not going to be able to find it now, am I? Rondon, it was 7 fouls that he made.
The one that made more tackles and more successful tackles, the one that made more...
Here we go. Top, fouls. It was
top three
average per
challenge.
Yeah. It was fouls. Average fouls per 90 minutes, and he leads CONMEBOL World Cup qualification so far with 7 fouls. like I'm sort of saying that in a good way. It backs up your point. It's a lot of dirty work. Like there's elite coaches, Pep Guardiola being one of them, all about tactical fouls. If Rondon can stop a team playing out by committing a foul, then you know, so be it. Over those two games, you know, Rondon didn't pick up a yellow card, I don't think, but he committed the most fouls in the whole of CONMEBOL qualification.
He did not have the yellows, and I'm looking for that in what page?
On page 14. At fouls, so Rondon committed the most fouls, 7 per 90 seven. minutes, and then second were Brujo Martinez and four or five other players with 6.
Yeah, no, but people don't know this, and Pep Guardiola says it, but he's a defensive coach. The thing is, he defends with the ball. He knows that having the ball would mean that the other team don't have it, so they don't score. They don't concede. And when they have, they do a lot of tactical fouls, as you said. And it's one of the things that I try to look up because it's a fantastic way of seeing how can I protect my team. If I have the ball, obviously the other team don't have it. So I won't concede. I won't have mistakes. You see that Manchester City have the ball always in the other area, so they are very far from their goal, so they can have mistakes and fail opportunities, but they know they have a lot of field to get to their own goal, and I believe that's something Argentina is doing. I saw the game against Ecuador, and they missed a lot of opportunities. I believe that they held Messi in that game. The foul that of the free kick, I didn't see the foul. I saw foul of Lautaro to the Ecuadorian player, not the other way. But what can I say?
And from the opening first two World Cup qualifying games from Venezuela, do you see the basis of a squad and a tactical approach that can see Venezuela qualify for the World Cup, or is it too early to say?
I believe if they play in an attacking way, putting Savarino, Soteldo, putting Yangel, putting Brujo Martinez, players that want to play with the ball, not be defending, not being chasing the ball around. If Venezuela wants to have the ball, we will qualify, and not as a 7, as a 6, or as a 5. I believe we can be a top 4, top 3 team, knowing that Uruguay is playing a wonderful football, knowing that Argentina and Brazil are going to be 1 and 2, knowing that Colombia has good players, knowing that Ecuador is playing a wonderful football. But Venezuela can win those games. Venezuela have shown the world that they can win those games. And with 18 points, we will be in the World Cup. That I think that's the mathematics they will need to do.
18?
Yes. With 18, we'll be at least a 6th spot.
And that's 18 points is just 6, the equivalent of 6 wins.
Yes, and as I say, we need to win 7 games in home. Six is the minimum required to qualify. But I believe we can win the 7 games other than Brazil and Argentina. I believe with Brazil and Argentina, we need to take advantage of the chances we have. If we have 1 and we score 1 against Brazil, we being in advantage, Brazil will be desperate because Venezuela knows how to play when they are in advantage. But we suffer when we are down in the score. So we need to take the advantage in those two games with Argentina and Brazil. So that's why I believe Venezuela can qualify to the World Cup if we win all the games in home. We don't need a lot of points outside. If they came, welcome. because we will need it. But if we can play the attacking way, we look to win the games, but actually win the games, not saying that we will win the game and we stand waiting for a counterattack to pace off. If we really, really look to win the game, we will win and we will qualify to the next World Cup.
And you said about obviously a lot of focus there on home form and you know, having an 100% record in World Cup qualification, winning all nine games is difficult for any nation to achieve. So where can you possibly see Venezuela picking up 3 points away from home?
I believe we can win in Chile. I think Chile is having a transformation from the past generation to the next one, and that we could take advantage of that. I believe we could have won against Colombia. I believe we can win against Uruguay, or at least taking 1 point from them. The other one, Peru. I believe we can win Peru.
Mm-hmm.
And Ecuador is a difficult one. Bolivia is a difficult one, but I believe we can win. Right now, the height of the La Paz Stadium is not looking as scary as it was two qualifications before. So I believe we can go there and take the 3 points.
Okay, and to sort of bring the podcast full circle, I'd like to end with a question based around, you know, the Paez family. What do you think that this generation of players that are playing the World Cup qualification for World Cup 2026 is a stronger generation than the generation or the two generations that Richard Paez coached? And part B of that question is, what do you think Richard Paez would be capable of, or a Paez mentality, even if it wasn't him, just a Paez mentality, a Paez philosophy could achieve with this generation? So two questions.
For the first one, I believe this one is a better generation. They are better prepared. We have a more rich culture of football that we had when Richard was the national coach, because right now we have players all over the world. If you see that generation of players, 85% of those players were playing in Venezuela. We achieved something huge. Right now, the players that we have are a lot better than we have. I don't know if players that we have in the past will play with the players we have right now. But I think right now we have more talent. And the second question, sorry, I got lost.
The second question, what do you think Richard Paez, or if not Richard Paez personally, but a Richard Paez mentality, a Richard Paez philosophy could achieve with this generation, in, if you like, in this World Cup qualifier?
Well, I believe Richard will put all the good players and let them play. I think that will give us what I believe Venezuela needs. I think Venezuela right now needs someone who said to the players, go and have fun. We have three or four coaches that suffered the games. With Richard, they enjoy the games. The games ended and they were like, already? I want to keep playing. I want to keep passing me the ball, keep having the ball. So I believe that with Richard, Venezuela will be for sure in the World Cup. I don't think that that Batista will do a bad job. I hope that he take us to the World Cup. But right now with the football I'm seeing, I don't feel identificated. I feel like it's something that is not proper from us. I feel that if Venezuela plays the way the Venezuelan plays, a good football, a football that has a mixture between the skillful players and the strength that has in the Oriental football in Bolivar State or in Anzoátegui, I believe we can achieve the World Cup easily. But it will be hard for us to do to pass this qualifier if we don't play like we know.
Okay, so I know I said last question, but as
I
always,
don't have any problem to
you say something interesting and it gives me another question. You said not just in that last answer, but you sort of said throughout the podcast, and you know, you or somebody in the players' family has said many, many times to me before, you talk about like the way that Venezuela should play football, the way that Venezuela can play football. And I think sometimes it's sort of because I'm talking to a Paez, or because that statement is put across from a Paez, it's easy to presume that when you say that, you mean the Paez way of football. But actually what you've just said is if they play the way that they play in Bolivar or in Anzoátegui. So what do you mean when you say the Venezuela way?
The thing, Jordan, is that you have saw a lot of Liga Football Junior players and teams. You have saw what the teams play in first tier and second tier of Venezuelan football, and you see that you can play a good football in Venezuela. It's not only the Paez family. We have a style of play that it's elaborate. We have another style like Zaragoza, like they have in Caracas. I like the football that they do. Sometimes the Puerto Cabello team plays a good way. The better team for me is Metropolitano, because they play an intelligent football. They know when to attack. They know when to defend. They do a lot of harm when they attack. And it's a team that it's strong. But you see all those teams, first and second tier, Liga Football Junior tier, and you don't see the Venezuelan national team reflected in those. You see that it's a team that suffers the game, that it's always looking for the battle and the 1v1 and looking for attack, to defend. And it's not something that is proper from Venezuela. Venezuela is a team, it's a country that likes to attack, country that likes the attacking football, to look for a goal always. You don't see the team suffering. I don't like the Venezuela the way that suffers football. I like the football where you can enjoy with the ball. And if you don't like the ball because you don't have the proper players, I like the players to enjoy, to do a long pass, to look for someone who passes from behind. I like that kind of football. But I don't see it in national team. And I see it in a lot of teams in the professional league and Liga Football Junior team. That's why I say that the country is not reflected in the national team.
Why do you think that is? Not like, why do you think it's not reflected, like as in what do you not see, but why do you think that how the football is played in those parts of the country and at that level, what's stopping that from, you know, translating to how the national team play?
I believe that it's the idea of the national coach. I think Batista doesn't see the Venezuelan players capable of play in facing the other team. I believe that he sees the Venezuelan players as below as we are. And he doesn't have the trust to say, hey, okay, let's put the ball in the floor. Let's go and play. Let's see if they are better than us. That's why I like what Richard does. Richard have a selection of players that were playing in Venezuela. And he said, guys, they have two legs. They have two arms. They have one head. Let's go and play football. That they win us, playing football. Now that we are scared behind during the bad formation, all hanging from the post. No, let's go and play. If they made more goals than us, perfect. But if we don't know how that will end, if we don't try it. And you see the things that happen. Venezuela always looked to play. We did the 2-4 against Brazil in Maracaibo. I was in the game. Brazil had a lot of difficulties before opening the score. We were attacking a lot, but they have players like Ronaldo, like Kaká, like Ronaldinho. They had a great team, and they end up winning only by two. They did four, yes, but they win only by two. Mm-hmm. Argentina, the first game of Richard, they win 5-0, but then they were playing here in Venezuela, in Caracas, and they did only three goals, and Venezuela could have scored. The day that Leonel Bielma did a free kick, he said that he buy his first house with that goal, with the price. that day that they did a goal in Argentina, they could have tied the game. I think it was 3-2, I guess. But you see, that's something that we were achieving step by step. It was not going to be from day to morning. It was going to be a very hard, very large, and very painful way, but it will end up doing okay. Richard lead the national team, winning 5-3 against Bolivia, doing a spectacular play. But they were losing 3-2, and the crowd goes wild against Ricardo. Richard ended up looking for Ricardo because he, at that moment, people were a little bit nuts with all the things that were happening in the country. And mm-hmm. Richard got scared of something that will happen to Ricardo or to our family. And he decided to step aside. And that's something people don't understand. If Richard was still in charge of all the qualifications, maybe Venezuela was in South Africa 2010. But mm-hmm. we will never know.
Well, no, we won't. And Richard now is 69 years old. He's been out of coaching since the COVID season, which he would have been with Mineros for. I know at the moment logistics mean he can't return to football. He's obviously in his green card process or his permanent residency process in the US, which is stopping him from taking any role at the moment. But is there still a desire to return to coaching from Richard?
He wants to. He have a lot of offers in this time, and he is waiting for the green light of the US government for him to take out of the US. He actually mm-hmm. have one or two in USL, but he haven't do anything proper because he doesn't have the green light, and he is afraid that will backfire him.
Okay. Well, it would be great to see him back in football. Juan, thank you for all your time today. I've enjoyed this podcast as much, if not more, than I knew I would. It's been great. I can't wait for it to be uploaded and other people to enjoy it as much as I have. Thank you so much for your time, and I hope to see you in person very soon.
Anytime, Jordan. When you want, I'm open to do another podcast with you. I enjoy a lot this type of things. Talking about football is what makes us as passionate as we are. So I'm looking forward. And remember to bring your shoes the next time you'll be here.
I will. And my first time in 2019, I had a broken arm. So that was, you know, out of the realms of possibility. And last year, I didn't think I was in jeans all the time, but I'm back to playing fairly regularly. I love football, and yeah, it'd be great to kick around. And I don't know why, but in Venezuela, it seems to be you're a little bit special if you have a left foot. I'm a left-footed, I share my birthday with Ricardo David. So 9th of February. So maybe there's something there for me.
Maybe that's something that will help you. So let's wait.
Okay. Speak soon. Thank you very much.